RVFTA's Campground of the Week is sponsored by Jayco. To view their complete line of RVs, visit jayco.com. And by Progressive Insurance. Get an RV policy quote by calling 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visiting progressive.com/RV.
America the Beautiful. There is adventure to be found around every corner.
And there is no better way to explore it than by staying at one of our country's 14,000 campgrounds.
Our team of correspondents will guide you to the best places to park your rig or pitch your tent.
On each week's episode, we'll give a complete review of one campground, location, activities, amenities, best sites, and tons of other insider intel.
Plus, we'll talk about regional highlights, food, culture, attractions, family fun, and all things great outdoors.
From the East Coast to the West Coast, and from the Great Lakes to the Mississippi Delta, it's time to hit the open road with RVFTA's Campground of the Week. Our Western correspondent is Brett Nielsen of BrettNielsen.com. Brett is an infrastructure engineering manager for a software company. To break away from the high-tech work, he enjoys camping with his wife Ashley and his daughter Lily. The three of them are based in Utah and frequently find themselves enjoying extended weekends in state and federal campgrounds, and now in a Jellystone Park. Welcome to the show, Brent.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's so good to have you back on. Last time on episode number 33, you reviewed Devil's Garden in Arches National Park, Utah. Where are you taking us to this week?
Well, we are going to head over to Colorado and visit the Jellystone of Estes Park.
Did you get lost, Brett? Were you on your way to a state campground and you took a wrong turn and you ended up at the Jellystone? Isn't your style, man.
It seemed interesting, and so we wanted to go check it out, and it was a real good option in the area. So,
all right, yeah, it really is. It's a little bit difficult to find those options.
I'd
in
like
Rocky
to think
Mountain
that our
National
evil
Park,
sway
right?
has been luring you to these more luxurious private campgrounds.
Hey, we've done a couple of them this year, and I got to say they're nice.
They have. Look, you know, you listen to our other podcast. It's pros and cons for everything, right?
100%.
It's all about what you want at that moment. So we can't wait to hear Brett's first review of a Jellystone. But first, we want to thank our sponsor, Progressive Insurance. When you're out on the road traveling and your RV breaks down, Progressive's roadside assistance will help get your RV started or provide towing to the nearest qualified repair facility. Learn more by calling 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visiting progressive.com/RV today.
I think Brett broke down and the Progressive people just dumped him off at the Jellystone.
They're like, you need a resort.
So Progressive's in league with Yogi Bear.
They'll take care of you.
All right.
So tell
Brett.
Us where about the geography of the campground. So where is it exactly in Colorado? Situate us.
Yeah, so it's just outside of a city called Estes Park, which is kind of a gateway to Rocky Mountain National Park on the east side. The best kind of orienter is probably Denver, and it's about an hour and a half northeast of Denver. So it's you know, a pretty good location there, pretty easy for folks in Denver to get up here. And Estes Park, as we'll talk about a little bit later, is a great addition in the area here.
All right. So we know already, because we've made like 10 jokes about it and the show just started, this is a Jellystone Park. It's part of the Jellystone franchise system. So it is private. Did you get any discounts here?
No, we didn't. So we are not a member of the Jellystone Club. They have their own discount club. If you are a member of that, you do enjoy some discount opportunities there. But no other discounts other than just the different rates for each of the nights. But
yeah,
no special discounts or anything.
Club Yogi.
I think Club Yogi is free too.
It is free, yeah. So you can just get your, and then you get like points for discounts. Okay, so tell us a little bit more about the size of the campground.
Yeah, so the campground, it's actually pretty good size. There's a total of 91 RV sites, and there's 20 cabins here at the campground. Those RV sites are a mix of no hookup, full hookup, and water and electric, and it's pretty evenly split between those, with a few more on the water and electric side. But the campground itself, and if you read any of the online reviews, there will be a lot of comments around the actual kind of topography, if you will, of the campground. It is built onto the mountain that it's part of. They did not cut a big section out, and so there are pretty steep hills here from the bottom of the campground to the top. It is quite a walk and quite an elevation gain between the two, which if you're constantly going back and forth can be a little bit of an issue. If you're in a vehicle trying to tow a trailer up that hill, it can be a little bit of an issue. Just something to be aware of. We didn't really experience any problems and actually found it enjoyable to walk around the park and get a little exercise that way. But that is something that comes up fairly frequently in the comments around the campground.
Now, I just want to break form from Campground of the Week, sort of our methodology, for a second here, because it might be helpful for some of our listeners to know that this is kind of a general problem for campgrounds in this area across the board, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, this isn't unique to this campground by any means. So one of the challenges that you have is if you want a big flat campground, you've got to find big flat ground. And generally big flat ground isn't in the middle of the mountains and doesn't have a bunch of trees. So if you want those kind of amenities, natural amenities, you have to work with the landscape. And so I love where this campground's situated. And I like the fact that they've left the ground pretty much intact. I mean, they obviously had to make some modifications, but it's very much intact the way it was when they got there.
So, Brett, you have like at least a 5,000 or 6,000 pound trailer, don't you?
That's right. Yeah, the Keystone. I've got a Keystone Hideout 24BHSWE for those that want to play the alphabet game. And we were actually in a little bit of a lower section of the campground. The full hookups area doesn't quite get as steep as the water and electric area. The water and electric area is definitely where the steepest incline is there. So ours really wasn't that bad getting over to the full hookups. There was really no problem getting over there at all. But I could see there is a pretty good sized hill that you would have to go up to get over to that water and electric side. And if you had a larger trailer, you might have a difficult time getting there. But they generally put the larger trailers and RVs and such in the full hookup section. So, you know, that kind of outweighs that a little bit and makes that so it's not quite as big of a problem.
So if you have a big honking Class A, they're not going to put you up high on the mountain and right. Give you a big problem getting up there.
Right, right. And they know, I mean, they obviously know that they bring people in and out of there all the time. So they're familiar with who can get in and out of those sites.
All right. So now we know that there's these different kinds of sites. Do you want to tell us a little more about the price for them?
Yeah. So the prices, you know, there's a range here, like in most campgrounds. But your cheapest sites are $35 for your no hookup. And then they go all the way up to $70 for the premium full hookup sites. Fridays and Saturdays, they tack on an additional $5 to that price. And then they also, this is the first time we got exposed to this, they tack on an additional $5 for anybody beyond two people.
So you got the child tax.
Yes, we got the child tax, which I thought was really interesting for a place like this because everybody's traveling with children. Typically, you're going to have, you know, two adults and then at least one, if not more, kids. And so we got hit with this additional $5 for our daughter. So that was a little surprise to us, but anyway, it was still very reasonably priced for us for the sites that we got, and anywhere from, like I said, $35 to $70. They do go up a little bit more on special holidays and weekends. I don't have a good number for what those rates are, but they do post all their rates on their website.
And then there's also, we're always like trying to remind people of the benefit of being within 15 minutes of the gateway to a national park, you know, to an entrance to a national park, because it's tricky picking out that campground where you're not going to have to drive a significant amount, you know, of distance just to get into the park in the first place.
Yeah, you are literally 15 minutes from the visitor center. So, and that's probably with traffic and stopping at the stoplights. So
It's very interesting to me that, you know, you just did this Jellystone close to a national park, because we just did some really nice private campgrounds close to national parks as well in the Northeast, and we were seeing higher prices. So when I see $70-$75 at a really nice private campground close to a national park, I'm like, oh, that's a kind of a bargain. So I wonder if just it's a little bit less to camp out in Colorado than it is in New England, for instance.
Yeah, and it definitely could be. You know, listening to all the different reviews on Campground of the Week, it seems like there is a little bit of a discrepancy between East and West Coast kind of pricing. But you do see some of the different amenities and activities and stuff seem like they're a little bit better or more involved on the East Coast properties versus the West Coast.
Right.
And you guys did an interview a while back. I think it was on the RV Family Travel Atlas podcast, where we actually talked to some of the folks from Jellystone, and they specifically called out, you know, these are privately owned private campgrounds, and so they're franchised, and so each owner influences what happens in that campground. So some are going to be, you know, over the top, and some are going to be the bare minimum. And so that can also, I think, probably play into some of the cost difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Good point. And thanks for bringing that up. So now you usually are telling us about your booking experience over there on Reserve America.
Right.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your booking experience at a private campground?
Sure. So this one, we were doing our research trying to figure out, we knew we wanted to go to Rocky Mountain National Park. So that's kind of how we started our search here. Started looking around at the campgrounds in the area, and all the research led me to Jellystone. And it wasn't research towards kids specifically. Obviously, this would be an obvious choice there. But looking at the best campground option, we felt that this was really the best camp for us, regardless if we had kids or not. So even if you were just traveling adults, I would probably still stay at the Jellystone in this case in comparison to the other campgrounds. We didn't spend a lot of time in those other campgrounds. We did drive by, and I was happy with our choice to stay at Jellystone. So I would recommend it overall. But we made the decision to camp here, and so we started looking, okay, well, what do we got to do to get it reserved? They do allow you to book online, which was great. We used their website, went through. We did it in January, early January, and then we camped there in June. And so they weren't open in January. They actually open Mother's Day weekend in May. And so we called them right after the weekend. I figured they would be busy that weekend. So I called them that following Monday, and they were already booked solid through June just from those online reservations. Because I was calling and asking about sites and what our opportunities were to change, and they're like, listen, we're fully booked. There isn't an opportunity to really change around. So their system actually assigned a site to us based on the specifications and the requirements that we gave them. But they were fully booked by the time I called them in May for June. So, you know, that's only a month away. I don't know how quickly it filled up, but definitely something you've got to get on and get going, being this close to a national park. You know, you want to get your reservations in as early as possible, as soon as you know. But the online reservation process was really straightforward and simple.
Now, Brett, you said you would stay here even if you weren't traveling with kids. So did you get your yogi hugs?
We did. We went down every morning and said the pledge with Yogi and did the Yogi Pokey. And
love it.
So every day that was one of those routine things that we did. And when we could, we tried to make the flag lowering as well. Sometimes the scheduling didn't quite work out for that time of the day. But the mornings we were typically still at the campground and we were able to make it down for that. So
isn't that a nice way to start the day with that flag raising? We really like that. It's, you know, patriotic. It's just great, showing gratefulness and being thankful that you're out camping in our big, beautiful country. Stephanie and I have always loved taking the boys to those.
Yeah, it is a nice thing. So, you know, you've probably seen my pictures, and the audience has seen my pictures on Instagram with our trailer, and we fly an American flag at our campsites. And so it's nice to be able to go to something like that. The kids are, you know, generally used to this from school or anything like that. They're used to these kind of routines. And so it's a great way to start. My criticism here would be, and I don't know if it's this way at all Jellystones, but the pledge was, I felt, a little bit late in the day. It starts at 10 a.m., and I would have liked to see that a lot earlier in the morning so we didn't have to kind of hang around to do that. We could have maybe just got out of bed, run down there, and then come back and had breakfast or something to that effect. So,
oh, yeah. I completely agree with that, because I think that usually in our experience it's been more like 9.
I think the Jellystone Quarryville was 9:30, and I had that little thought, like, this is a little bit late. So good point.
Yeah. Yeah, and this was at 10. The flag lowering was at 6, which was pretty good, but usually we weren't quite back by that point. And so we missed the flag lowering on several occasions. So
now, before we talk about any of the other sort of activities and everything that were there at the campground, are there any other site details? I mean, you really described how there were different parts of the campground and where you would want to be. And I'll be honest, in my experience and what you were describing with the booking, I was thinking, wow, I might put in that I've got a 40-foot rig. I'm not lying to get one of those to make sure I had one of those full hookup sites down there, you know? Yeah.
No, and that's one of the games that you have to play when you can't necessarily call them. In this case, we were booking before they were even open for the season, so we just kind of had to guess. All the sites are really, I'll say, are back-end sites. There are a couple that aren't quite a back-end. They're maybe more of a pull-off type site, but generally speaking, they're all back-end sites. And the staff there is great at directing rigs that you couldn't think would fit in a space into the space. So they escort you out to your site and a little to the left, a little to the right, and they get you wedged right in there. And they're great. They know what they're doing for sure. All the roads are paved, but the sites themselves are all dirt. That leaves a little bit of an interesting dynamic because it's, you've got these nice paved roads and then you're off into these dirt sites that have kind of a natural grass growing through that driveway area. It's not high end and finished like a concrete driveway would be, but it's a lot more natural into the landscape as we were saying. And there is kind of a wide range in quality here from what we observed. So over in the full hookup sites, the area we were, I almost want to say that area seems somewhat forgotten in the campground. The sites there seem to be, I don't want to say it this way, but the lowest quality sites, whereas the sites in the water and electric, the kind of up on the hill, have some really beautiful sites. There is no real grass. It's all just like nice, flat, kind of manicured dirt pads, if you will. But some of those have these nice deck areas built out on them where they've taken advantage of the landscape, and since it kind of drops off a hill, they've actually built a wood deck where that's where your actual table and chairs and stuff are set up, and you can kind of sit out there and enjoy this nice unobstructed view because you're up on this hillside, and they're just really nice. Hindsight, staying there again, I would really consider the water and electric sites unless I really, really needed that sewer hookup. Because I felt that those sites are actually a better quality site than the full hookup site.
Sounds like a great place to bring a pop-up camper.
There was actually several of them, several pop-up campers. There were some teardrops. There were some class Bs in there. So there's all kinds of different things, especially up in that area. A lot of smaller size trailers up in that upper area for sure.
All right. So you mentioned the flag raising and sort of participating in that very uniquely Yogi Jellystone experience. What other kind of amenities did they have here at this Jellystone?
Yeah, so they've actually got quite a few of the standard kind of amenities. They've got a nice pool area, a nice playground area with swings, which is always something we're disappointed in if they don't have swings at the playground, because my daughter loves them. They've got a nice basketball court, horseshoes, miniature golf, and then an arcade there, which this was our first experience with an arcade at a campground. The games were probably a little older than my daughter's age. So, she didn't really spend too much time in there, which is probably a good thing because everything in there costs money and you could.
Yep.
Brett was up late playing Galaga every night, but that's a whole other matter.
And then they've got the typical, laundry and showers and camp store and those type of things there as well. And then they do offer RV rentals. So they have some sites that have an RV pre-staged on it that when you book the site, you can book the RV and stay there if you didn't want to do the cabin type thing.
Now, the Yogi camp stores are usually not quite typical. I'm sure that maybe was a little bit of a shock to you to see their camp store, say, compared to like the camp store at, one of Utah's state parks.
Right. Yeah. So this one definitely, it didn't have a lot of the, what do you want to say, like the accessory type stuff, the the, you know, dump hoses and, you know, little odds and ends that you would need, those kind of things. They are definitely targeting the kids. And so lots of t-shirts and stuffed animals and hats and things with your name on it and all those kind of things, which some of those found their way into our trailer.
It happens.
See how that happens.
I always buy myself something. I need my new Yogi mug, you know, for the year.
So the funny story here is there was a dad one day, we were at the flag raising, and his kid had the big Yogi stuffed animal, which is $100 in the store. And so the kid's coming in with this $100, you know, a stuffed animal, and all the other parents there are just kind of giving him the eye, like, seriously, you bought that for your kid? And I could tell the dad was feeling uncomfortable. And then he said, it's what he wanted for his birthday.
He had to let everybody know.
He had to let everybody know that, you know, he wasn't.
Because the poor guy knew he was being judged.
Let us not judge at the campground. Let us, in the world of the RVFTA Podcast Network, let us not judge each other's camping decisions.
Oh, the poor guy. It's his birthday present, people.
I've bought $100 worth of cheap plastic guns over the last year.
Yeah, you wish you had a big Yogi. Yogi
a big bear. Yogi, it lasts longer. It's more tangible.
Yeah,
it's still in that kid's bedroom, so you know it's worth it. So, and sometimes you just got to splurge on those kind of things. You know, like you said, we can't judge. We don't know what they were doing, and it was really funny. I laughed a lot. So.
I love the parents. Everybody knows exactly what's going on there. You know, it's like we're all on the same page here, people. All right. Now, tell us about the Wi-Fi in cell, because this is an important issue when you're going into the Rockies, right?
Yeah. So, you know, anytime you get up in these mountain areas, it's sketchy at best as far as your cell service. So cellular here is really unusable outside of the ranger station, which is really where the camp store and all the office type stuff is. They do have a phone outside on the wall. So if you have some sort of problem in the campground, you can get to that phone and make a phone call. But they do offer free Wi-Fi in the campground. And it was okay. It wasn't great. You're not streaming Netflix on it. But we had a couple of issues where we had to get online and take care of a couple things for my daughter. She kind of got ill, and we had to do a little bit of research why we were there. And it was good enough for us to be able to get on and do that research and find out what we needed to. And so it was very nice to have that, because if we didn't have that, we would have been getting in the car and driving, although it's only 15 minutes into the city. But that's sometimes an inconvenience, especially depending on what time it is, to leave the campground and go driving out to just get some sort of cellular service. So,
all right. Now, what about the activities that are going on here? We know that regularly scheduled activities are part of the Yogi Bear experience, but like you said, to a greatly varying extent. So what was it like at this one?
Yeah, so, you know, this was our first real exposure to a planned activity type of campground. And so upon check-in, they gave us a schedule for the week, and it was really nice. I took previous advice that we kind of held the schedule to us to make sure what we wanted to commit to before exposing it to our daughter to kind of say, what do you want to do? Just so there wasn't some challenges there. What we found is we arrived on Monday, and so we were there and left on Thursday. And so we were there during the week. And so the schedule was actually very manageable. There was not a lot of activity. So you know, an example of a day would be the flag raising in the morning. And then after that, they would do a scavenger hunt. And then maybe midday, there would be some type of ceramics or craft. And then mid-afternoon, they have an ice cream truck that comes around. And then after that, you would have the flag lowering. And that would be like the complete activity list for that day. And that was pretty consistent from day to day. They would have one or two activities, and that was really it, outside of the flag raising and flag lowering. I was really curious, though, what the weekend looked like. And so when we were checking out, I asked them for a copy of the schedule, and it is loaded to, you know, from top to bottom, like every half hour, 45 minutes, there's something going on somewhere in the park. So a big difference between weekday and weekend traffic. We were not there on the weekend, so I can't speak to the craziness and all the activities there. But the activities were very consistent. It's just during the week, it seems like they do one or two of them. And during the weekend, they seem to load them up. And so you've got crafts, laser tag, wagon rides, candy bar bingo, scavenger hunt, outside movies. You've got, you know, kind of the whole gamut of things here that the kids can get involved in and do.
And another one of those times when it's probably a trade-off, right? Like, you get a quieter experience, you get a better experience probably in the park during the week, or you can get that, like, amped up Jellystone experience maybe on the weekend. So it depends on what you're looking for there.
Exactly, exactly. And so that's that, depending on, again, what you're looking for. And us not knowing, it worked really well for us for to be here during the week, just based on the schedule of everything that we had. And we were happy with the schedule the way it was. It would have been fun to be there for all those activities. But I think in a campground like this, where there's so much outside of the campground that you want to go see, not having the jam-packed list of activities was actually kind of nice, because it allowed us to not feel bad about leaving the campground like we were missing something. So
right. Okay, so you've already given us tons of information about this campground, but do you have any additional insider details to add?
Yeah, and as I mentioned, the campground's steep, so you just have to think about that. It's not that big a deal. You know, once you get your rig settled in your site, you're done. However, if you are up in those top sites up on that hill, you've got some walking back and forth to the pool or back to the ranger station or any of those kind of activities. And that is a little bit of a steep hill there. They do rent golf carts. I felt that they were terribly expensive for what they were. So we didn't take advantage of those. But I really like those water and electric sites. I thought that they were really top notch. As kind of another insider detail, they do offer premium sites. Looking at the premium sites, I did not see a significant difference in them that would be, to me, worth the price difference. The only thing I could consistently see that was different is, in addition to your picnic table, they had a metal round table with four chairs in that picnic site. And they had put a green carpet kind of down where you would kind of park your rig. And so that was really the only differences I could see. And other than that, I didn't really see any major differences in those premium sites. So I would probably opt for not a premium site, when you camp here.
And those water and electric sites, just to be clear, that are up high a little bit, I mean, what are the views like? I mean, are you really feeling like the Rocky Mountain High sort of, or there are views everywhere?
Yeah, there's a lot of trees here. So a lot of the views do get obstructed by trees, but you get this feeling because as the hill drops off the side, you've got those trees growing up. So you tend to be more up at the canopy level of some of those trees. And so it's actually a really nice, nice feeling in those, especially out on those little deck areas that they have. Like I said, I would probably look to book somewhere up in that area if we were to go back. And you do get views between the trees, and you could see the nice mountains in the distance. Looking back over towards Estes Park, you can see, you can't really see into Estes Park. It's a little too far away for that. But the views are definitely, definitely nice.
One additional question about those sites with the decking attached. For our listeners with very young children, should they worry sort of about the safety of, you know, like the younger 2-year-old or so on those sites?
Yeah, that's something I would definitely, if you are going to book in the water and electric area, I would get on the phone with the staff there and make sure that you are in a site that would be okay for the younger kids. The decking areas, the slats are tight enough that nobody's going to go through the slats, so you don't have to worry about that. But that decking area is only cordoned off around where that deck is. Right outside of that, you do have a hill that goes down. And so if you have younger kids that are going to wander that aren't necessarily familiar with drop-offs, that could be a risk or a danger up in that area, and you would want to probably be more down in that full hookups area, which are wide, flat, open sites, which are, you know, a lot more conducive for kids wandering around and playing that way.
Okay, that's incredibly helpful information for our listeners with the little ones, especially the ones that are just discovering their walking, which can always be such a challenge in the campground. So we know that nobody's perfect. What is one reasonable thing that you think that this campground kind of invest in that would just really heighten your experience here?
Okay. I actually have two. I know you asked for one, but I've got two.
Okay. You're allowed. You have seniority on this show.
I would really say more activities during the week. I know I said previously it was nice only having a couple, but after seeing that weekend list, holy cow, like it would have been fun to be a part of that list. The campground was sold out during the week. And it was sold out on the weekend. Now, the campground changed. You know, a lot of people flipped over on Thursday, but Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, it was sold out. So there isn't a bigger crowd on the weekend than there is during the week, but yet the activities are significantly different. Now, they do charge $5 more, but I would be willing to pay $5 more and have all those activities. So I'd like to see a few more activities on the list during the week. I think that would be great. The times also seem to be a little bit better for some of the activities on the weekend schedule versus the weekday schedule.
All right, you said you had two. What is it?
Bonus round, people.
The only other thing that I had is maybe a little bit more presence from management, especially at things like quiet hours. So we had one of the nights where some of the neighbors, a few sites up, were staying late up into the night, well past quiet hours, making quite a noise, and there was no staff to address that, which I don't see a lot of staff addressing that at a lot of campgrounds. We have had some that the management that is very present, but I would have liked to see a little bit more management presence here, especially at key times like quiet hours and
And especially at a Jellystone, because so many of the campers there have kids. I mean, there's probably like 80% of the campers there are with children.
Right, exactly. And the quiet hours start at 10 p.m. here. So I think that's totally reasonable for, lights out, be quiet. And it's not that you can't be outside having, enjoying the campfire, talking quietly. But when you have several people carrying on and laughing and that, it does get noisy. And if you had smaller kids and you were close by, that could cause a lot of problems for you come the next morning.
And frankly, it's easy to fix.
Yes.
To me, that's just a very easy fix. Okay. Now, you did have a favorite site. I'm just looking at your notes and I didn't want to miss that. You said in your notes, you said you had a favorite site. So, recommending to anybody who might go there, what's the best site at the campground?
I truly think site 67. It's in the full hookup section and it sits up on this little ledge area. And the way you pull your trailer in, then you've got your awning out and you can sit out by the fire and you just have this great view of kind of the other campers, the other trailers and that in the area. As people are walking up and down the street, they're walking by you. And, it's not a privacy thing. You're very much exposed here, but it is a great site right on a corner bend. So you've got lots of, people watching kind of activity there.
Felt social at the campground, Brett.
We wave and say hi to people as they walk by. So we're not hidden in our, tree forest type site.
Brett has discovered that some campgrounds have people at them.
They
do. It's amazing. I don't know where all these people come from.
When Brett goes to these $12 a night state parks that are like total dry camping, he's like, there's no one here. It's so quiet. I love it.
So we really like the way site 67 was set up. We felt it was what a premium site should be, and it's not a premium site. It is a full hookup site. But if you can request it, I liked 67.
So does Lily want to go back to a Jellystone? Was it sort of like a special thing to her because you've been, you do a lot of state park camping? Is it something like, I'm going to bring her back and she wants to go back?
Yeah, she totally would go back in a second. She liked the activities that we got her involved in. She loved the pool. That's like her big thing now is any campground that's got a pool. When we were planning this trip, she said, I can't wait to go to Colorado. We said, what are you excited about? She said, they have a pool. So
welcome to our world, Brett. But, you just have to, have faith when they say things like that. You're like, you know what? I know they're saying that, but they're also, remembering the other stuff, too.
For sure. So I think she would love to go back. We would personally like to go experience other Jellystones. This one, they gave us a nice brochure of all the different Jellystone campgrounds when we checked in. And there's a couple pictures in there that are just kind of jaw dropping of this is at a campground.
That's where we just were.
it's amazing. We'd love to have something like that. And we really don't have those things here on the West Coast. I've been searching. I can't find them. So we would really like to experience some of these really, I'll say, high end luxury type of true resorts, if you will.
We believe they're coming soon. We'll see if we're right on that. We do believe it is an expanding market.
They have poor Brett, who has the Rockies and Glacier and Yellowstone all within striking distance and Arches.
Get stuck with all this awful scenery and don't have these cool amenities and fun water parks.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Brett, thank you so much for that review of the Jellystone of Estes Park. It was so much fun to listen to your experiences at your first Jellystone campground and just sort of contrast it with what we normally hear from you. So we are going to be back in a minute to hear about all of your favorite activities around the campground and in the national park. Stay tuned. Generations of family fun. It's what Jayco's founder, Lloyd Bontrager, set out to provide nearly 50 years ago when he started the company on the family farm in 1968.
Today, Jayco, the world's largest privately owned RV manufacturer, is still focused on providing a way for families to create lasting memories.
From camping trailers to gas Class A motorhomes and everything in between, you'll find that Jayco offers the most standard features and the best warranty in the industry, giving you the value you want and the peace of mind you deserve.
Visit your local Jayco dealer or jayco.com for more information. Jayco, generations of family fun. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are here with Brett Nielsen, our Western correspondent. You can find him at brettnielsen.com. And he just gave us a really, really interesting review of the Jellystone in Estes Park, Colorado. Now we're going to talk a little bit about the region, and there is much to do around there, right, Brett?
There is indeed. Yeah, this is one of the things that was hard for us as we were planning our trip to Rocky Mountain. Once we figured out kind of where we were and the campground that we were going to stay in, we started to get really excited about the area right there around the campground.
So you were staying near Estes Park, which is generally considered sort of like the hub of activity around this national park, right?
Yes, indeed. It's for the east side of the park. This is how you get into the park. I'm sure there's roadways that skip the city that get in there, but you pretty much go into Estes Park and then you can branch off to a couple of different directions and get into different parts of the park and the different visitor centers there. So it is really this hub of activity. And as we started researching, I personally was getting more excited about Estes Park than I was Rocky Mountain. Because it just seemed like there was so much fun stuff to do and neat things to see. It's a great town. We really enjoyed our time there.
So what were some of your highlights?
Well, so first, I can't say it enough. I want to give a shout out to the staff at the Estes Park Medical Center and specifically Mark Weisner. My daughter got sick while we were there and we had to get her into the doctor. And the staff at that medical center was amazing. This was our first time being on the road and needing some type of medical attention. And it was really comforting to know that people like the staff there are available. We all have our doctors that we go and see. We showed up at this facility, no chance of future business. We're nowhere near home, but they treated us so well in there. And got us right in without an appointment. We were seeing a pediatrician, they just treated us like we were family. And it was great and really comforting that kind of facility exists. And I know this facility isn't unique to this area. They're going to have these kind of places all over the country. And so it's nice and comforting to know that these kind of places exist, that we can go get help when we're not at home and need those professionals to give us some advice and point us in the right direction.
Yeah, Brett, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because one of my friends that was RVing for a very long time before we started had given me some notes on a place that we were going. And in those notes, she had included a medical facility. And I laughed. I said, oh, Maura, do you always read? And she said, well, yeah, I do. I have 5 kids. I wind up sometimes in a medical facility when we're traveling. And it really helped me to do a double take and say, oh, that's not a bad idea. It takes you 3 seconds to look up that information before you go someplace. And then when something arises, if it does arise, you kind of have a little bit of a game plan.
I think Lily deserves a return trip. I think this one, the return trip needs to get planned.
Poor Lily.
She does. Yeah, she got a nice stuffed animal out of it. So
$100, nice, Brett.
not the biggest one, but yeah.
Brett was the dad who said that at the flag exactly. raising, and Lily was the child with the $100 yogi.
So the Estes Park Medical Center, great facility. Hopefully nobody has to visit it, but if you are in the area, definitely they can take care of you there.
And good to know by a national park. I mean, people get hurt in national parks.
Yeah, and this is a nice facility. They've got the emergency on one side, and then they've got a full doctor's office with all kinds of different physicians and everything. So it's a great combination to have that close to where you've got all these people coming in and out on a regular basis.
All right, so on sort of the that was a blessing in disguise, and we yes. appreciate that perspective on our show. But what else in Estes Park was actually fun?
So we happened across it just by chance. So one of the things that I would highly recommend people go to is every Thursday from 8 to 1, they have the Estes Valley Farmers Market. And it's kind of in this main drag on Elkhorn Avenue. And they set up all the typical kind of farmers market booths, the little 10 by 10 tents. But we found more stuff at this one that we were interested in and wanted to buy than we find at our local markets or any of the ones that we've been to. There were some great vendors there selling different arts and crafts, and then some great different food items. We ended up going home with a couple of things. We were somewhat limited because we were going to the farmer's market and we weren't going back to the campground. But if we would have been going back to the campground, we would have gone home with a bunch more stuff out of that market. We could only really have dry goods, so to speak, things that we didn't need to get it back in the refrigerator. But definitely check out the farmer's market there. One of the other things that we did was the aerial tram. So it will take you up 1,200 feet. From Estes Park to give you a great view of the area. The price to get up on the tram is $8 for kids, $12 for adults. You get in these, they're kind of an older kind of mine car type of tram. So they'll hold maybe 10 or 12 people, and they've got two of them. One's at the top, one's at the bottom, and they just kind of flip-flop back and forth. You get up there, they've got a nice little snack shop up at the top. Of course, gift shop as well that you can buy stuff. And then you get a nice view of Estes Park. You can look over into Rocky Mountain. And they've got great areas up there to actually do a lunch. So you could either buy lunch up there or bring a lunch up with you. It would be a beautiful place to hang out for an hour, have some lunch, enjoy the views. We definitely enjoyed our time going up there, got some great pictures of the valley, and really enjoyed that.
Sounds like a great price as well to me.
Yeah, it was kind of one of those no-brainers. We didn't realize it was there, and we saw it, and then I looked up and found the price, and I was like, oh, well, that's really affordable for that. Let's go ahead and do it. And so we rode the tram up, and I didn't see any hiking opportunities. A lot of times when we've seen those kind of tram things before, you could ride it up and hike down or something like that. I didn't see any of those kind of opportunities, but definitely a highlight for us. And we were able to get on really quickly. We didn't have to wait in line very long. It didn't the trams move back and forth fairly fast. So
now you and Flo had a road trip stop in common this summer.
What a coinky dink.
Yeah, imagine that. So the Stanley Hotel is there, and Flo got to go visit the Stanley. So that's something that's been of fame in literature and movies and whatnot. So that's a big iconic place. Just as a heads up, they do charge you if you want to go in and take a look. So to get on the grounds, they actually charge like a viewing fee, so to speak. So you can see the hotel, but if you actually want to get on the grounds and like go in and wander around, they do charge a fee to do that. We did not go into the actual hotel, but it's very predominant there in Estes Park, up on the hill, and you can see it. And it's obviously been in the movies and is pretty famous that way.
All work and no play makes Brett a dull boy.
That's right.
Did I say that right? Except the Brett part.
Yeah.
So I mentioned previously Elkhorn Avenue, which is where the farmer's market is. And Elkhorn Avenue as a whole is shops, tons of shops. And don't get me wrong, this is a very touristy area. This is T-shirt shop after T-shirt shop after T-shirt shop. And there's a lot of Christmas shops that sell Christmas ornaments. There's a lot of cabin-type shops that are selling cabin-type decorative wares. They've got all kinds of different art type shops. There's a couple of glass blowers there, which are pretty nice because they actually do the glass blowing right there in the shop, and they have it like a screened off area in the one that we stopped in, and they walk you through the process. So you're standing outside and they're telling you everything, they're doing it as they're doing it. So you get to watch them actually make a vase or a bowl or whatever it is that they're working on at the time. And that was pretty neat to see that actually happen. And then there's, of course, lots of snack places along here, ice cream shops and various goodies and treats, and then lots of different restaurants and stuff in that area to be able to eat at and kind of hang out and, spend the day.
Any favorite restaurants that you guys experienced?
Yeah, we actually liked Poppy's Pizza and Grill. Now, I know I'm talking to some folks from New Jersey, so I can't talk about pizza. So I'm just going to leave it at that we enjoyed it.
It was acceptable. We can say that.
Seeing Brett hanging his head in shame right now.
When I was putting this on my notes, I was like, I can't talk about pizza. it's too controversial. So,
well, it's just not pizza.
Yeah, that's right. I know. It's just dough and cheese. So yeah.
Pizza-like.
They put ketchup on it out there, don't they, instead of tomato sauce?
Exactly. So we ate at Poppy's. We really enjoyed the food there. They've got a good selection of beers and different drinks, as well as a ton of different pizza-like items. We definitely enjoyed that. If you're looking for kind of an adult beverage to hang out and just kind of take a load off for a minute, there's a great place called The Barrel. It's made out of a shipping container, and the shipping container is where they actually is the bar, and then all their seating is outside. And this is all right there on Elkhorn Avenue, and that's a great place to stop. They've got some games and stuff outside that you can play. Not really a kid friendly place, but if you're there, just you and the significant other, you could definitely stop in there and grab a quick drink and kind of relax in that area.
Sounds good, Brett. Let's find our park now. Let's talk about Rocky Mountain National Park.
Yeah, so Rocky Mountain, this was obviously what started our direction here, is wanting to go to Rocky Mountain, experience that. It was the land for that was actually purchased as part of the Louisiana Purchase back in 1803, and then subsequently after that became a national park. In looking at it, it seems like depending on where you look, to figure out what the most visited park is, I seem to get different numbers every time I look. But when I looked one of the times, it said that this is the third most visited park for 2015, and it had about 4.15 million visitors.
Yeah, Great Smokies is like 10 million, and the Grand Canyon's like 5, yeah. And then yeah. Rocky. And then, yeah, that makes
and
sense.
I think Rocky's number 3. So it's I've looked at a couple different things, and sometimes the numbers are a little bit different, but that seemed to be fairly consistent. So it is a crowded park, and so you have to go in with that kind of mindset. You guys have given some tips on some of the other podcasts around visiting crowded parks and what to do and how to avoid those crowds. And so that's something you do have to think about here when you come to the park, because it is so accessible. It's so close to Denver. I suspect there's a ton of people coming in from that area because it's so easy and so accessible to get in.
Okay, that's a really good point, Brett, is that many of our national parks are not weekend destinations for a local population. And yep. You just pointed out that this is. So it's something you really want to consider, too, and maybe visiting on the weekend versus the week.
Yeah,
for sure. I mean, this is like an hour and a half outside of Denver. You could get up in the morning, drive the hour and a half, and be on the trail, by 10 a.m. easy. So it's very doable. So I could see where there would be this influx from those local population hubs coming in here. Whereas you could contrast that to somewhere like Yellowstone, which is a little bit more removed from major populations. It takes a lot more to get there than this. This is a lot easier. You could fly into Denver, rent a car, and be in the park in an hour, or an hour and a half. So.
Right. So people need to listen to our tips for visiting national parks over there on our MPS 100 podcast.
Yes. Yep.
Well, there's some similarities to Acadia in that, Boston's not that far away, and it's a crowded park. People enjoy it. So what were some of your highlights in the park?
Yeah, so one of the big ones here, just like up in Glacier, there's the iconic road in Glacier. You've got the iconic road here, which is Trail Ridge Road. Its claim to fame is it's the highest continually paved road in the United States. It's 48 miles long. It goes from the east side of the park to the west side of the park. And at its peak, it's 12,183 feet high. So it gets way, way up there.
Shortness of breath at the top, right? I mean, when you step out of the car, that's an adjustment.
It is. And, when we were there, there was still lots of snow up at that elevation. And so they get significant snow up at the top of that. So there are a limited season for when that road is open. But at 12,183, there's no trees, there's nothing, there's just snow and in kind of the tundra, if you will. The Alpine Visitor Center is pretty much at the halfway point. It's not at the summit there, a little bit after the summit, but it's about the halfway point of that. It's a great place. They've got all the typical visitor center stuff, as well as a huge gift shop there. And then a nice cafe kind of thing that you can get lunch at or, a snack or something like that. So it's a good definite stop halfway through. You've got some nice views out of the windows up there at the visitor center. And then you can continue down to the other side of the park.
Now, Brett, I just, it brought to mind when you just said that about the altitude. One of the very worst case of altitude sickness that I ever had was in Colorado.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just a good time to plug. Look into that before you go to Rocky Mountain National Park and just kind of read up on those tips for adjusting to a higher altitude. Because I had forgotten about that because now I know what to do, when I'm going. But that was really bad for me. My very first visit to Colorado was hard.
Is it a white knuckle drive, Brett, or is it a pretty comfortable drive?
I wasn't uncomfortable on it. It's not a huge road. There is a lot of turning and winding. But it's open on either side, so you're not like right up against a rock wall or something like that, like you are on the glacier road. You know, I was okay. We passed a couple of people pulling trailers on it. You know, you would have to be pretty confident to pull a trailer over this road. There's no restriction saying you can't. But you would have to be confident in yourself to pull a trailer, you know, over this road. So think twice if you're trying to traverse east to west using this road. As far as driving a regular vehicle, I was driving the F-150.
Well, you weren't driving. That's not a regular vehicle, Brad.
Well,
the
yeah,
F-150 drives itself.
All right, save it.
It just kind of floats. It just.
Save it, boys, for men in their rigs.
Men in their rigs.
All right. Where else are we visiting in this national park?
So one of the things where we had the little delay with my daughter, we didn't quite get to spend as much time in the park as we wanted to. So we really were looking forward to some of the hikes in the area. And unfortunately, we didn't get to get out and take advantage of that. But the main area for hiking is the Bear Lake area. And every time we talked to the rangers and talked to them about the hikes, every ranger we talked to referred us to this area, and they all referred us with the same caution of it's really crowded, get there early. And I was thinking, this park is huge, and every ranger is referring people to the same location. No wonder it's so
crowded. Yeah, right? Like, branch out, rangers.
You know what? Yeah. I got to say something here as an East Coast boy. I would not mind going on a crowded hike, because then I wouldn't have to worry about the bears as much.
Yeah, right.
No, that's very true. That's very true. There is something with crowds that you obviously, you know, there's safety in numbers in that respect. So, but as, you know, pointed out previously, you want to try to get to these areas early. You want to arrive before 8 a.m. or after 7 p.m. for your best parking options, and then get on those trails and get out. The Bear Lake area is this kind of hub, if you will. It's a great lake. You can walk around the lake itself, and there's tons of different trails that branch off of that. Everything from very small, easy hikes to long, you know, overnight type hikes that all branch out of that area. So it's definitely a hub to go and spend some time you know, hike around that area. The rest of the park has lots of hikes as well. It just, every time we dug in, everybody was always referring us to this Bear Lake area. And a lot of the guides were doing the exact same thing. You know, the travel guides were focused on this same area. Unfortunately, we didn't get to spend the time over there that I wanted to. But one tip is they do offer a lot of free shuttles out of Estes Park that you can get on the shuttle, and it will take you all the way up to the Bear Lake area. And so you don't have to deal with the parking. So they've got those shuttles running. There's some maps available at the different visitor centers, the visitors bureau down there in Estes Park. They can give you a map of where all these shuttles are, when they pick up, where they drop off. And so you can get pretty much anywhere around those major areas by these free shuttles, which makes it really nice, because then you don't even have to deal with the parking.
And that seems like such a trend now with a lot of the national parks that are trying to cut down on traffic, is to do some shuttles and make it a little bit easier for people to get in and out without having to take their own vehicle.
Yeah. And I think it's obviously probably best, you know, everybody with trying to carpool and everything else, it makes sense to drive one vehicle in, have a bunch of people get on and off, and then have that vehicle come out. So from a conservation standpoint, it's probably best anyway to do something like that than have everybody in and out with all their vehicles.
All right. Well, Brett, thank you so much for all of those wonderful recommendations for the area that is around the Jellystone of Estes Park and around Rocky Mountain National Park. Find your park, hashtag NPS 100 here. And now we want to also recommend that you join in on the fun over on our Instagram account at RV Family Travel Atlas and play Where is Flo? Okay, we mentioned that Flo this summer had wound up at the Stanley Hotel on her Great American Road Trip, and you never know where she's going to show up next. So Progressive is sending Flo all around the country this summer.
And it's a crazy zigzag of a trip. I mean, she's in South Dakota. She's in Colorado. She's back in South Dakota. She's in California. She's very spontaneous.
Yeah, she goes where the wind blows.
And she's so tiny, she can always find a room to stay in.
All right, so keep an eye out over on our Instagram account. When you see that picture of Flo pop up into our Instagram account, you're going to tag a buddy and you're going to guess where Flo is. All of the correct answers are entered in every week for a chance to win some fun Progressive swag.
And a huge thank you to Jayco. You can check out their complete line of RVs at jayco.com. And I think they have pretty much all of their 2017s up on the website right now. And they have some really cool looking toy haulers, if you ask me.
Huh, I wonder where we're going.
Brett,
right.
Where can we find you on social media and on the World Wide Web?
So my website is brettnielsen.com. And on Instagram, it's Instagrablin.
All right. And lots of great pictures there from Brett's summer adventures. And we look forward to having him back on the show right quick.
Can't wait to talk to you again, Brett. Thanks.
Great. Looking forward to it. Thanks, guys.
See you at the campground.
See you at the campground.
Thank you so much for tuning in to RVFTA's Campground of the Week.
Links to the campground and regional attractions can be found in the show notes at campgroundoftheweek.com.
And don't forget to check out the other podcasts in our network.
RV Family Travel Atlas is hosted by yours truly, Jeremy and Stephanie Puglisi, and available every Friday morning.
And Girl Camper, Going Places, Doing Things, is hosted by Janine Pettit and released every Tuesday morning.
Join us next Thursday for another great review from our team of campground correspondents who will inspire you to hit the open road and explore America the Beautiful.